Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Hi, everyone. Greg here. Before we begin the podcast today, some news has come out since our last podcast 3 weeks ago. First, it was announced about 2 weeks ago, another Revolution podcast, Six States, One Pod, which I know a lot of our listeners listened to and also supported. They announced they will stop their show. They're going to stop producing their show. They've been on a hiatus this season, and as a fan of theirs, this year has not been the same without that podcast coming into my feed every Tuesday morning. All of us on Revolution Recap were huge fans of them, and I've been spending the last few weeks of thinking of what to say to thank them for their hard work over the years and for producing Revolution content that was badly needed. And one day I'll go into my thoughts in more detail, hopefully, on how much I loved their show and how much I'm going to miss it. But tragically, one of the hosts of Six States, One Podcast, Ray Sullivan, passed away this week at the age of 44. I didn't know Ray. I don't have any firsthand accounts of Ray or what a great guy he was. I only knew him through the podcast and interacted with him a few times on Twitter. But every secondhand account I have heard or seen this week or prior to this week, the people who did know him seem to have been very lucky to have him in their lives. And I've spent some time this week reading about what he achieved. And I wanted to spend a moment to briefly highlight his accomplishments and his legacy. He served 3 terms in the Rhode Island House of Representatives. He was the head of the 2008 campaign for president for Barack Obama. And he was heavily involved in the fight for marriage equality in Rhode Island. A number of Rhode Island politicians released statements this week describing his impact. And I just wanted to read one here from former Rhode Island Lieutenant Governor Charles Fogarty. This is via the Providence Journal. Ray had a commitment to public service and improving the quality of life for all Rhode Islanders, whether as a staff person, a legislator, a lobbyist, or just as a person who really cared about the people of Rhode Island. Most people may have never heard of Ray Sullivan, but his efforts over the years have made a big difference in the cause of equal rights and social justice. So on behalf of Chris and Sean, we wanted to start our podcast today to acknowledge Ray Sullivan and his contributions to the Revolution community and for all of the causes he fought for and believed in. Our condolences go out to all of his friends and family.
Welcome to Revolution Recap. We're coming to you today after the New England Revolution returned from the international break and only managed a disappointing 2-2 draw against the struggling Chicago Fireside at Gillette Stadium. I'm Sean Donahue, and joining me today is Chris Veloukis. Chris, how are you doing?
You know, considering the result, I'm doing okay. You know, can't really complain. Happy to see the Revolution playing again. Happy to see them back out on the pitch. But definitely disappointed to see the 2-2 result. But I also did want to quickly reiterate a bit of what Greg said in that pre-roll clip that everyone just heard. And I just wanted to send out my condolences to the family and friends and all the community around Ray Sullivan. And his passing was just such a tragic piece of news to hear. I quickly wanted to add a little bit from my perspective of it. I did not know Ray personally, but I got involved with podcasts in general by listening to Six States One Pod, listening to Ray, John, and Alex on that team over there. And that's really what drew me into a lot of podcasts in general. Like, I listen to a lot more podcasts now because I started listening to Revolution Podcast, because I started listening to the Six States One Pod. And so, you know, Ray holds that spot for me personally as getting me involved into this sort of media. And it's really, really sad. And it's something that's really bummed me out. And I know that I would not necessarily be in this position today to be able to be talking on a podcast if it wasn't for Ray and, you know, the team over at Six States One Pod. So I just wanted to just again reiterate my condolences, and it's just such a big loss for this Revs community. And I know it's tough to bounce back after I'm saying something like that, but Sean, how are you doing?
No, and I completely agree with everything you just said, and, you know, everything Greg said in that intro. Yeah. It was, you know, tough week and very tough to hear about, right? I also didn't know him personally, but, you know, all of us were listeners to Six States One Podcast. I think people, you know, might listen to our podcast and, you know, see us as podcast hosts, but we're also podcast listeners and, you know, listen to Six States One Pod and you know, Revs Confidential and all the Revs podcasts out there. And, you know, that was one that had been around for a long time, was really, really well produced by them. Always, you know, very impressed to listen to that one. So I, you know, like Greg said, we were sad to hear the podcast was going away, and then kind of, you know, devastated to hear about Ray. So it's, you know, just really sad news. You know, not just for what he was doing in the Revs community, but, you know, as Greg pointed out, a lot of the amazing stuff he was doing down in Rhode Island, involved in Rhode Island politics and a lot of different areas. So, you know, really sad, but, you know, I will say it was great to see that the team did spend the time to honor him, both at halftime at the game and both talking about him on the broadcast. So it was great that the team did that. I think it was, you know, certainly the right thing to do, and I was very happy to see that they did that. And there's really no great way to transition from that to today's game, but we will jump right in. And, you know, you talk about the disappointing result today. It could have been the perfect sports day in Boston with the Bruins winning their season opener and the Red Sox winning a great game against the Astros, but the Revs just had to ruin it with a 2-2 draw. Chris, what was your key takeaway from this game tonight? Again, a, you know, disappointing result against a Chicago team that's not very good.
Yeah, it's honestly, it's just the lack of composure. You know, the Revs go down and they score and they give up a goal, and it's something that kind of feels like it's becoming a trend, right? So Willie Capp's team with really I didn't expect to see a goal like that coming out of him and off his foot, but it was such a good goal, very well worked. And not even a minute later, Chicago's coming back and equalizing it. And then later on in the second half, you know, Gustavo Bo eventually gets the go-ahead goal to go up 2-1. And this was a little bit later, it was 12 minutes later, but Chicago does come back and obviously gets the draw to make it finish 2-2. But it makes me wonder, like, is this something that's becoming a trend? What's going on with the Revolution, you know, mentally? Is there anything that we need to be concerned about as fans? You know, it seems like it's becoming, like I mentioned at the start of this little rant, is that it's becoming a trend, right? So in the last four games that they've played now, they have conceded a goal within 2 minutes of scoring a goal three times, which is kind of alarming. That's a lot. So you look back, it's tonight's match, and then there was the Montreal match. There was an own goal scored by Montreal, and then 2 minutes later, Montreal comes back and scores a goal. Obviously, that was different circumstances. That was 3-0 to make it 3-1. Then before that match, there was another Chicago match where it was on September 23rd, right? Chicago scored 1 minute after the Revs scored. And it's really a concerning piece. I know we even got a question from this as well, from Not Blue, Not Green, It's Teal over on Twitter, wanted to know what's going on with the quick response goals. And that's exactly what I want to know too. What's going on with the quick response goals? What is happening with the Revolution? Why is there such a lack, a lapse of concentration? And is this something that needs to be addressed? Like, obviously, I guess yes is the answer to that question. But how will it be addressed? What is Bruce going to do? I want to know how the Revolution come back from something like that, and how they plan on advancing through the playoffs while having these lapses in concentration and just, hey, we scored a goal, let's celebrate. Hey, they kicked off, who cares? Let's keep celebrating for another couple of minutes until we concede a goal and we're like, oh crap, now it's level again, or now we're down a goal, whatever the situation is. It's very concerning to me, and that's my big takeaway, is what is this team going to do to repair whatever it is that's broken with them?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And as you were saying that, I'm having, you know, terrible flashbacks to MLS Cup 2006 when the Revs scored that goal in overtime to take the lead. And then, you know, as they were celebrating, conceded the equalizer to Brian Ching. So I think no Rev fans want a repeat of that. But it is a legitimate concern. And, as you know, it's a cliche that you're most vulnerable, you know, right after you score a goal in that, you know, 90 seconds or whatever it is. And the Revolution have proven that to be true. But it's a surprising thing to see with a Bruce Arena coach team, that he would, you know, for all the credit that Bruce Arena gets and deserves, it's a little bit surprising to me that with a team coached by him, that he hasn't kind of found a solution to this already, because it's not a new problem. It's a problem that's been, you know, coming up again and again for the Revs this year. And it hasn't come back to bite them, you know, too often. They usually have still managed to get out a win, or, you know, in this case, they still managed to get a draw. But you know, Chicago, like you said, is not a very good team. If you're, you know, doing this against Chicago, that's one thing. You know, if you're doing it in the playoffs against Atlanta, or, you know, whoever the Revs end up playing, you know, a much better team than Chicago, whoever it is, it's a lot more troubling. So I don't know how the Revs fix that. But I guess to kind of jump to another topic that relates to this, you know, the guy that was particularly at fault on that first goal, I thought, was Brandon Bye, who, you know, had a complete lack of concentration or lack of awareness, and Madron kind of just ran in untouched behind him, and he didn't pick up on the run. Captoon was tracking him, and then there was a, you know, guy open at the top of the box, and Captoon kind of peeled off to cover him, and, you know, Brandon Bye was marking nobody, so it was very, you know, it was clearly Brandon Bye needed to mark that guy. I don't know if Captoon, you know, should have said something and didn't, but, you know, either way, I think Brandon Bye's awareness needs to be better. And, you know, Seth Maycomber pointed out on Twitter that we've seen a lot of goals conceded on Bye's side of the field recently. And I, you know, I've noticed the same thing. Bruce actually said after the game that, you know, Brandon Bye's awareness needs to get better. I don't know the exact quote in front of me, but he essentially said a guy that's been in the league this long, you know, needs to do better in situations like that. And, you know, that it is a problem. So, you know, going to your takeaway, is, you know, is Brandon Bye part of that problem? And are you concerned at all that, you know, I think in the past month or so, we have seen these lapses of concentration from him that have come to cost the Revs?
You know, Brandon Bye is such an interesting topic, because in the past, I've always defended Brandon Bye by saying that he's much better defensively than he is on the attack. And I think that maybe that's changed a bit. He's learned to cross, and I think he's done very well at doing so. And he's often getting involved in the attack. I've noticed that maybe it's been a bit reversed, where now he's getting more involved with the attack, and his defensive awareness and his defensive abilities has maybe lacked, or his awareness, not his abilities. His abilities, I don't think, have lacked at all. I think his awareness has maybe gone down a step or two. Maybe that's something to do with the way that this back line has played so far this year. I quickly think about this, and, you know, I'm thinking a lot of how Andrew Farrell has played this season, and, you know, he gets, depending on who you're talking to, he gets either stick or praise by his flair, if you want to call it that, or maybe somewhat of a flamboyant type of defensive style, where he's always doing some sort of acrobatic act to clear the ball. I think a lot of that's coming because Brandon Bye is not necessarily defensively in his position, and maybe that's because he's getting more involved on the attack, and maybe Brandon Bye needs to take a step back and focus more defensive and get Tajon onto the pitch and maybe take the ball down the right wing and not let that be Brandon Bye's responsibility. Maybe that's what needs to happen. I don't know. I'm just speculating. I'm not Bruce Arena. I'm not a tactical genius like Sam Minton. You know, I don't know exactly what needs to happen there, but that's kind of, in my opinion, maybe something along those lines.
Yeah. And tactically, I was actually a little bit surprised when the Revolution were up 2-1 that, you know, Bai wasn't staying home more, because we saw him kind of bombing forward even when the Revolution were late in the game, up 2-1. And that isn't why the Revs conceded the goal that they conceded. So I don't, the second goal, that is, I think, you know, he gets a lot of blame for the first goal. I don't think he, I have to go back and look, but I don't think he had much to do with the second goal. But I was just surprised as a general observation that, you know, Bruce hadn't told them to kind of stay back more, because the Revolution made substitutions. And we'll get into this more later, but they made substitutions with, you know, Boateng, Buchanan, Adam Buksa coming on to play a lot more offensive. So they, you know, they were giving up a bit, especially in midfield on the defensive side. So when they had taken that 2-1 lead, I would have thought that, you know, Bai would have been one of those guys that would have been asked to stay back a bit more to kind of consolidate the lead and play safe defensively. But he was still, you know, really pushing forward. And again, I'm not saying that's why the Revs conceded that second goal, but that's something that seems like in the future, you know, could be problematic. You know, the Revs made these subs to go out there and get a winner, and then they got what could have been that winner, and then, you know, they didn't seem to really adjust after that to kind of play more solid defensively, which doesn't really fit with what we've seen from Bruce Arena this year, because I think we have seen him, you know, kind of play smart and more defensively when they have a lead late. But so that was, you know, kind of another observation that we might hit on a little bit more later. But
that goes into a bit of the second goal that Chicago scored too, is, you know, Gustavo Bo. Wow. I'm having trouble with his name, but Gustavo Bo going down and it nearly bagging the third goal for the Revolution. And I'm pretty sure it was Gustavo, right? Correct me if I'm wrong there, but Slanina for Chicago makes an incredible save, diving to his right and parries the ball away. And that starts the attack for Chicago. That's something where the Revolution are like, oh, wow, we were so close. But you know what? We're still up 2-1. Who cares? They had a very lackadaisical attitude. You know, the fact that they missed putting the game away at that moment really came back to bite them. I know you mentioned earlier that it doesn't necessarily come back to bite them, but definitely tonight it did. And against better opposition, you know, Chicago Fire, they have some good players on the team, but we're not joking, or like, they're not kidding anybody by thinking that like they're a quality side to be facing when it comes to MLS opposition, right? So against better opposition, this is going to be a much different scenario. A 2-2 draw is going to be a lucky result against a better team, against, you know, the New York Cities or the Nashvilles of the league.
Or I don't want to talk about Seattle too much, because I talk about them a lot in this show. You know, Seattle, I think, is a class above all those teams. So if they get to MLS, yes, Cup and play against Seattle, you're definitely not going to get away with that against them.
Although Seattle is losing right now against Houston, I think it's worth noting. So I'll keep everyone updated as it goes on, even though when this pod comes out, it's going to be well after that game is over.
Definitely worth noting, because it's good for the Revolution, but also not worth taking much away from as far as Seattle's quality, because Rui Diaz and Ladero are not playing in this, and neither is Jordan Morris, who it sounds like is going to be back soon. So it's I pulled up that Seattle lineup, and it is not a particularly impressive lineup.
Kellen Rowe is on the pitch. That's all you need to know.
Yeah, and I think they're like one or two players short on the bench too. So it gives you an idea of you know, how healthy Seattle is right now, which is, I think, is probably Seattle's biggest problem going into the playoffs. But they, you know, in theory have been getting healthier as the year has gone along. So that's a problem and a discussion for another day. But I wanted to get into another problem for the Revolution going into the playoffs. Please. beyond Seattle. And this is one that a couple people asked about, but one we've talked about before. Raleigh Revs fan on Twitter asks, is the layoff during the playoff bye week a concern? Looked rusty tonight. A better team will punish. Going back a little bit to what you said, James Downing on Twitter said, looked sloppy after the long layoff. Should we be increasingly concerned with the monster layoff we could be looking at in the playoffs? So was this a 17-day gap here? 16-17 days, I think.
You put me on the spot. I didn't count, but it was 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, so it was shorter than the potential gap between the playoffs, because the potential gap between the playoffs could actually be 23 days, I believe, which is absolutely insane. So I think the Revolution's last game is on the 7th. I think the Revolution's last game is on November 7th. And then the playoff game, we have some inclination would be the Tuesday game, which is November 30th. So that'd be a 23-day gap. I'm just assuming that the 30th is going to be the game, because we heard Bruce Arena say several weeks ago on his 98.5 interview that he heard the Thanksgiving Day game is going to be a Western Conference day, a Western Conference game. And I believe the Patriots are playing at home on that Sunday. So it just seems like unlikely that the Revolution will play one of those days. That's probably going to be the Tuesday game. Either way, whether it's, you know, the Saturday game or the Tuesday game or the Thanksgiving Day game, it's going to be a longer gap than the Revolution had just now. And I think that is a massive concern for the Revolution, because I do think they looked, you know, sloppy and sluggish and rusty to start this game. And I absolutely think the gap was the main catalyst for that. And, you know, make that gap even longer, and it's extremely problematic. Chicago had a decent layoff, too, not quite as long as the Revs, and I think that probably impacted them a little bit as well. So at least there was a little bit of, you know, equilibrium there. But the Revolution are going to be playing a team that played another playoff game, you know, 4 or 5 days before. So, you know, they're going to have momentum. They're going to have just won a big game, and they're going to go into this game, you know, probably raring to go and pretty sharp. And if the Revolution come out sluggish like they did in this game, you know, that could spell disaster. Because, again, whoever the Revolution play in the playoffs are going to be a better team than the Chicago Fire. So I think that is a massive concern. But if I'm being honest, I think that is the biggest detriment to the Revolution going into the playoffs, or the biggest concern going into the playoffs. If one thing is going to stop the Revolution from winning MLS Cup, I think the biggest thing that could stop them is the momentum killer massive break. So I don't know what the Revolution do to solve that. I think they, you know, some part of that has to be that they play a friendly match. And I've, you know, I've seen some people say maybe play you know, one of the local teams like Providence City or Revs 2. I think they need to play a good team. I think they need to play a competitive match. You know, we saw San Jose play Cruz Azul during this last break. There were some problems there with red cards and fans, and obviously you don't want to have that happen going into the playoffs, but I think the Revolution need to find a way to play, you know, another good team, and maybe the Revolution can find a team that's in the Western Conference, you know, or something that's going into the playoffs as well, that also is in a similar situation that the Revolution are, you know, unlikely to face in the playoffs, and play them. Any random team in the West that, you know, has the same situation, I think that would make sense for the Revs, because even the teams that are going to be playing in the first round have a long gap. So I think that something like that is what the Revolution need to do, because they need something to continue their momentum going forward and to continue their sharpness. And if they just don't go, you know, 23 days with just practices and no game, I think that's going to spell complete disaster for the Revolution. And be a massive problem. And, you know, you mentioned on Twitter that this was kind of a test case for that, and I don't think they passed that test.
No, not at all. And I was calling it a soft test, where I think the gap is smaller than what they're going to be facing when it comes to the postseason. And it's also a soft test because the opponent that they're facing is going to be much stronger than what they saw tonight. And on both accounts, it's not looking promising for how it's going to turn out. However, if I'm not mistaken, I do believe that the Revolution had a week off. So the players that were not necessarily on international duty were still allowed time away from the pitch and not necessarily training every single day. I'm sure there was players that were training, you know, optionally, but there was no mandatory trainings from what I have gathered for one whole week during that whole period. And so that could play a lot into it as well. The fact that once the regular season ends after November 7th, I don't think there's going to be a week off. You might get a day or 2 days off here or there, but it's going to be preparing. It's going to be go time. This is when the season starts. And there, I hope, is going to be a huge mentality shift saying, okay, no more games, no more messing around. It's time to get the job done. If the Revs can't make that mental switch, there's going to be a big issue. And we're going to see a lot of what we saw tonight, a lot of poor passes, a lot of sloppy play. You know, there were so many passes, even coming out the back, uncharacteristic passes like Henry Kessler just tapping the ball up to I don't remember who he was passing to on the specific occasion I'm thinking of, but just not necessarily putting enough mustard on the ball, not getting it to where it needs to go, allowing Chicago to step in and get a step ahead and really create trouble and not allow the Revolution to get out of pressure. And that was a big issue for a lot of the night, especially in the first half, where Chicago just kept pressing, and the Revs couldn't seem to find a way out of it. Every time they did, they would turn the ball over in one way or another. They were trying short 1-2 passes. They were not connecting, and a lot of it was just due to rust. And is that because they took a week off as a club, or is that because they haven't played a game in 16, 17 days? That's a good question. That's something that I would like to know necessarily what the catalyst is for why they were so rusty, because in my opinion, they were more rusty than what I expected. I don't know if you feel the same way, Sean, but the gap in schedule, to your point, is going to be a huge focus point going into the postseason. It's something that I'm very concerned about.
I mean, heck, with how short the off seasons are these days, it's almost a gap as long as the off season. It's just kind of crazy. I'm sure that a little bit of time off contributed, but I don't think that that's the whole problem. I think the gap without any, you know, competitive match is a huge, massive problem. And I already thought this was going to be a big issue going into the playoffs, and watching this game just made confirmed kind of what I already thought. So we'll see what happens, but I do think it's kind of vitally important that the Revolution schedule some sort of friendly during that gap. And I think it has to be a friendly against a team that's actually going to challenge the Revs, not a friendly against a team they're going to walk over, because I don't think that would have that, you know, I mean, that would help a little bit. That'd be better than nothing, but I don't think that's the kind of, you know, sharpness that they need going into the playoffs. So we'll see what happens, but this game was a red flag for something that was already on the radar as something extremely problematic. But you know, if there's my biggest concern going into the playoffs, that is my biggest concern going into the playoffs, that they're going to have such a big gap before a game, because it's, you know, it kills your sharpness and it absolutely kills your momentum. And the Revolution had a lot of momentum going into this last break. You saw none of that to start this game. So
you're talking about sharpness, and I'm going to say, I want to add on just to point out that I think every single player on this roster had an issue with how sharp they were. Carlos Hill was missing passes. He missed a shot early on in the match that was chested down to him from Teal Bunbury. I don't remember the minute, but it was in the first 15 minutes of the match. And, you know, not necessarily an easy play, but it's a play that Carlos Hill should make, and it's something that you'd expect him to make. Gustavo Bow consistently made poor passes while trying to cross it in to try to find an open Teal Bunbury, an open Carlos Hill, or an open Adam Buxa. It's not necessarily just the Brandon Byes or the Henry Kesslers that were making poor passes. It was also in the attack, and it was a lot of the reason why the Revolution only came away with two goals. They had many times a lopsided attack where they were, you know, going forward 4-on-2, 3-on-2, whatever it is, the numbers that were in the Revolution's favor, and they couldn't even come away with a shot. You had an 18-year-old goalkeeper. I know he's very good, and he's going to be an up-and-coming goalkeeper. He's going to be a real force to be reckoned with in the future. But he's still 18 years old. I don't care how good he is. You need to start testing that keeper. And the fact that they weren't just taking shots whenever they had space really, I think, set the tone for the entire match.
You're not giving him enough credit, because he's only 17.
He's 17, exactly. So, I mean, when I was 17 years old, I was... 5'7", 125 pounds, a tiny little specimen of human being. Nothing compared to what Slanina currently is as a professional athlete at 17, which is, it just blows my mind to see him playing goalkeeper, as good as he is too. But you gotta pressure the kid. He's 17 years old. You have these grown men out on the pitch that just can't seem to test him. Why not just put the ball on frame? And worst case scenario, you're going to start drawing Chicago's defense out a little bit to stop giving you that space. Nobody was taking the shots whenever they were afforded to them. That was really driving me nuts all match. And just the rustiness, though, I don't want to get off your point too far here, but the rustiness, I think it was just everybody. The only person that seemed on his game when it came to passing was Matt Turner, which is really bizarre to say. Everyone else, I thought, had a really poor game overall. They just made uncharacteristic passes, not smart decisions, and just turning the ball over in general in poor spots. I don't know. I can go on and on, I guess, about the same exact thing when we start going in circles about it, but that's kind of how I felt. It was so much rust, and it really is a concern.
I will say, I thought DeJuan Jones was one of the least rusty-looking players out there as well. So I'll give him a little bit of credit in a group of very sloppy and rusty-looking Revolution players. I thought he actually looked pretty decent from the start of this game. The rest of them found their way into it later on, but he was one guy that kind of stood out to me as doing, you know, pretty well for the long layoff. So hopefully whatever he did, the rest of the team can learn from.
Yeah, and there were players that made good plays as well. You know, Matt Polster, I mentioned this to you before we started recording, but Matt Polster in I think the 12th minute made a really nice pass to Gustavo Bow from midfield down the right flank. it found him into space, but it led to nothing again. And I think that's that needs to go with saying. But DeJuan Jones, I'll give that to you. I think he had a good match. Tell that to Foot Mob, though, because they gave him a 6.6 rating, which is not necessarily good.
And just one last thing here. I do want to point out that Bruce Arena was asked if the gap caused a problem after the game, and he said no. So he wouldn't use it as an excuse. I don't think he should use it as an excuse, because when you use it as an excuse, it kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy when they have another gap before the playoffs. But I think, you know, unquestionably it played a role. And I think, you know, if Bruce Arena was being honest and you know, in a vacuum, he would probably admit that that was the case. But I will give him credit. He didn't use that as an excuse. And I think that from him has to be the attitude, because they're going to be dealing with this again. So don't make that a, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy and give him that excuse. With that said, I think we covered a lot of the topics I wanted to cover that haven't been covered by listener questions. So before we do jump into listener questions, and there are a lot of them, I want to take a minute to talk about the sponsor of the podcast, Glocko Kits. Glocko Kits is the go-to place to bring unique vintage jerseys to your home. The passion for the beautiful game doesn't have borders, and neither does its selection. And if you head to GlockoKits.com today, you can get 15% off your order using the code REVSRECAP. Again, that's REVSRECAP, all one word, at checkout for 15% off your order at GlockoKits.com. There's actually a lot of Revs gear up there right now, so as you gear up for the playoffs, jump on to Glocko Kits, use code REVSRECAP, save some money, and get some Revs items up there. I think we've seen a shortage in Revs items in some places where people are looking for things, so get some both vintage and new Revs items at Glocko Kits using code REVSRECAP. And with that, we have a lot of listener questions. The first kind of bunch is all focused around the defense. John Pilkington on Twitter asked, what happened to the defense this year? Gustavo Lopez on Twitter asked, why does our defense concede way too many goals? Mark on Twitter said, the defense really concerns me. Does it concern you as well? Going into the postseason, are we starting to show cracks and weaknesses? What do you think, Chris?
You know, I think it's a little bit overblown, maybe. The Revolution have conceded 36 goals so far this season, and that's the 10th least amount in MLS, so they're kind of middle of the pack. If you want to compare it to maybe last season, where they were exceptionally good defensively, it's definitely a different point of contention. I think that might have been more of the focus, was to not allow so many goals, whereas this year the focus has been more on let's try to score so many goals. And also, they're playing up a lot more often than they were last year, so it's a different roster, it's a different play style. It's a lot of different tactics. When you're playing with the lead, you're not necessarily always looking to try to get more goals. You're going to be inviting a little bit more pressure and trying to just close out a game and see the game out. And that will invite more pressure. That will invite teams to maybe test you a bit more. So I don't necessarily think that our defense has necessarily completely 180'd from last year. I think it's still overall the same defense. Maybe they've conceded a little bit more overall, and maybe that has something to do with, I think Matt Turner necessarily hasn't been as great as he's been last year, as great as he was in the playoffs, definitely not that. And then, you know, maybe ever since the Gold Cup tournament, you know, Sean, you and I had discussed this as well previously, but ever since the Gold Cup, I feel like Matt Turner hasn't really been himself in net necessarily. He's been a standard MLS goalkeeper. He hasn't been a stellar MLS goalkeeper, and that plays a little bit into it as well. I think tonight, maybe both of the goals that were scored, he might have been able to do a little bit better on. So that definitely plays into it a bit. But overall, I think the defense not necessarily has been worse. I think it's just maybe seen a bit more pressure. You know, the Revolution are used to playing, looking for more goals, pressing up higher, really trying to get something out of a match offensively, as opposed to trying to stand pat and close out a game. And so I think that's just been a bit more of the difference, a bit more of why it seems like the Revs have been conceding more. I don't know. Sean, do you kind of agree with that, or am I kind of taking this out of left field here?
No, I agree with that. I think the defense kind of is who we thought it was. I mean, it's not perfect. They've performed really well over the years, but they've shown there are some areas of weakness. But you know, what is concerning is what you said, Matt Turner. I think Matt Turner, he's still playing well, but he was playing kind of at an otherworldly level last year, and I think he was at the beginning of this season too. But over the past couple of months, we haven't seen that as much. And I think he even commented himself at some point recently that, you know, he didn't think he was playing at his best. So I think that's concerning, because I think, you know, Matt Turner is a huge part of this team's success, and if he's not playing at the level we know he's capable of playing at, the defense needs to step up, and the rest of the team needs to do more to make up for that. So, and you know, it will be, I'm sure people won't like that I'm saying this, but I think that his case for goalkeeper of the year this year is weaker than his case was last year. I think he probably should have won it last year, but I think if I'm being, you know, nonpartisan and completely, you know, objective looking at statistics and everything, I think Andre Blake probably should be goalkeeper over the year over Matt Turner at this point, pending, you know, something changing in the past few weeks. And I'm sure I'll get tweeted at for that. And I'm glad Greg's not on, because I'm sure he wouldn't appreciate that. But I think that's the reality. So that's concerning to me, that, you know, Matt Turner's not playing at his best. And, you know, PMart 2452 mentioned that he thought it was a weak goal to let in for Turner, for a goalkeeper of Turner's caliber, that second goal. I think it was. I think it was, you know, a tough angle for the goal scorer there, and maybe he was shielded a little bit, but I think peak Matt Turner saves that. So that's a concern. And then what we talked about earlier, Brandon Bae's kind of lack of awareness that we've seen recently on a lot of kind of trailing runners that have come into the box on his side, where he's the only guy that would be capable of picking them up, and he doesn't pick them up and kind of mark space instead. That's concerning. You know, that's hopefully fixable. Hopefully Bruce Arena can kind of coach that out of him, but, you know, that's a concern to me, and Matt Turner's play is a concern to me. Otherwise, I think the defense is kind of, you know, what we thought they were, and it doesn't surprise me that, you know, they have some games where they give up goals that look a little bit sloppy, because they're not a perfect defense. I think we maybe got a little too hyped about them at some times this year because of how well they were doing and how many shutouts they had and at certain points, but I guess this, what we're seeing now, doesn't surprise me.
And I want to make it clear that we're still a pro Matt Turner podcast. So
yes,
we can only be so negative about him per night. So
he can't be the most amazing goalkeeper on the planet every single game. So everybody has a little bit of a slump, and during his slump, I think he's still much better than the average MLS goalkeeper. It's just going from being completely unbeatable to showing a little human side that I think we've seen the past couple months as the Revs headed towards the playoffs is a little bit concerning. And, you know, on the general note of how the Revolution looked, Randy LH on Twitter said, "We looked pretty bad. Let's be honest. Do you think it was the 2 weeks of rust or something deeper?" We talked about the rust. Do you think it was just that, Chris, or do you think there was anything more than that?
No, I mean, it's just the rust. Our three players that were still playing during that international window, Matt Turner, he looks fine. Tejon Buchanan, he looked like himself. I don't know if I'd say he looks fine, but he looked like himself at least. And then Adam Buxa, I thought he looked really good. He looked sharp. You know, he had a nice shot on goal right when he came on, try to impact the game. I thought it was a nice idea to go near post on that shot. Slanina just bested him on that chance right there. I didn't have any issues with how Buxa played. And I mean, I had some issues with how Tejon played, I guess, but that's just Tejon. Overall, no, I think it's just rust. I think the players that were not playing during that international period are the ones that really showed some weaknesses tonight and showed rust. And like I said, I think DeJuan Jones was maybe the only player that really looked sharp out there. Even Carles Gil, I thought, looked pretty poor overall. So, yeah, I'm attributing it to rust. If it carries over to the midweek game, then maybe it's something more, but I think it's just rust.
Yeah, I think it's just rust. Again, the kind of weaknesses in the defense that we saw, I don't think are new. But I think what we saw today was just a product of rust. But although, like you said, I think Tejon had a couple of moments that you would have liked to have seen him do better on, but I mean, he shouldn't have been rusty because he was playing international games. He could have put that game away with that chance where Carles played a fantastic ball to him and he was behind the defense, and instead of taking a shot, he kind of tried to dribble around the keeper and dribbled right into his arm. So that was kind of the biggest disappointment from Tejon tonight, I thought, but we're going to get more to him later because we got some questions about him.
Real quick, before we jump on to the next question, I just want to make it known that as of this moment right now, Seattle just lost the game official 2-1. So the Revs kind of got a little bit of a silver lining tonight. When it comes
to silver lining, I'd say.
Yeah. When it comes to Supporter Shield race. So the Revs now are 6 points away from clinching Supporter Shield. when you're comparing them with Seattle. I don't think Kansas City is in the race anymore. So yeah, 6 points is now the number that we're looking for the Revs to get Supporter Shield. Anyway, carry on with the questions. I just had to interrupt with that, news.
No, that's huge, because if you know Seattle had a chance to really close the gap a bit, given their games in hand and everything else, if they had gotten 3 points, the Revs only gave one. So
that's Joao Paulo, whatever his name is, he came inches away from tying the game in the 94th minute on a free kick. So the Revs got really lucky. It went off the bottom of the crossbar and it did not go in the net. So yeah,
well, some good news for Revs fans then. Going back to PMART 2452, he asked, what are we doing up a goal, leaving three back to that easily be countered in the 88th minute? And I think this goes a little bit back to kind of my comments on what they were doing with Brandon Bystow, pushing him up late. What did you think about kind of the strategy of still kind of pushing guys forward and leaving the defense a bit exposed there?
Yeah, I think this comes back to my takeaway as well. Like both of our takeaways are kind of covered when it comes to this one question. They were pushing up, trying to get that game clinching goal. And they were pushing. Gustavo Bow put that shot on target. It was a really good shot. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was Gustavo Bow, right?
I believe so, yep.
Okay. Either way, that shot, that Slanina save, it was really incredible. And that really started a counter. The Revolution were really pushing, trying to close this game out. And I think that's, in a way, how you need to approach a game. But when you're looking at the time too, so it was 87th, 88th minute, something like that, when they were really pushing, trying to get that goal. And then, of course, Slanina makes a save, and it just really counters I can't think of the word. I don't know why I have such a hard time finding words sometimes when I'm on this podcast. But all the momentum, that's what I'm looking for. It just really it changed sides to Chicago. The Revs kind of just felt defeated. Oh, we couldn't quite get it. But you know what? We're still up 2-1. That lack of accountability for trying to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to do when you see Slanina make that save, when Gustavo almost scores, and you're like, ah, well, you know what? We're still up 2-1. 2 seconds later, just like that, any lapse of concentration in MLS at this stage in 2021 is going to result in a goal against. And I think that's what happened, in my opinion. I think that's why there's three back there. Shouldn't have been three back there. The Revolution were not quick enough to in transition to get back and have everyone in position where they need to be. They're not playing a three back. They don't ever necessarily play a three back except for when they're attacking, when they're pushing for a goal. That's the only time that you ever see the Revs with three in the back. And that's, in my opinion, exactly what happened. I think they just got caught out of position. They got caught sleeping. The game's almost over. Let's just go home. They were thinking about their dinner plans, not thinking about trying to make sure that they wrap up the win. And it's just a mental mistake, in my opinion.
So I'm going to pose a question to you. I completely agree with everything you said, but you know, the Revolution did have two substitutions left, and they did have one period in which to make it. So they felt, I mean, they gave up the equalizer. They brought on a lot of subs to make the team more offensive with, you know, Boateng, Buchanan, and Buxa, and they got that equalizer in the 76th minute. Should Bruce Arena, and we've seen him do this a lot this season, have brought on some defensive subs at that point to try to close out the win? Because when you look at who they had out there on in paper, that is a vulnerable lineup to the counterattack. When you have, you know, so many offensive-minded players out there, you know, Buchanan, Boateng, Bunbury, Carles Heel, Gustavo Bow, Adam Buxa, those are all primarily offensive-minded players. So, and then we talked about Brandon Bye being a guy that pushes us forward a lot. So, you know, we've seen Scott Caldwell, who, you know, for whatever reason was on the game day roster today, come in that situation to try to lock things down. They had, yep, Luis Caicedo available.
They did.
And if you're putting Luis Caicedo on this bench over Scott Caldwell, I think you're saying that he can also fulfill that same role. So do you think Bruce Arena, when they had gone up 2-1 in the 76th minute, should have, towards the end of that game, brought on a Luis Caicedo, say, for Gustavo Bow, to kind of shore up the defense and leave them less vulnerable to the counterattack?
Yeah, that's the exact substitution that I was thinking should have been made, was Luis Caicedo coming in for Gustavo Bow. You don't need Gustavo Bow in there going 90 minutes, especially when he's already bagged a goal. You don't need that to happen. And, you know, to your point, or to Scott Caldwell's point, you know, he's being called the closer this year for a reason. It's not just a fun nickname. I mean, in a way, yeah, it's a fun nickname for him, but also he comes in for a reason. He comes in to finish the game. He's not coming in to try to win you a game. He's coming in to close out the match. And I think Scott Caldwell should have been on this roster. I think instead of having both AJ De La Garza and Christian Mafla and John Bell on the roster, I think one of those maybe should have made way for Scott Caldwell. And I think Scott Caldwell really could have helped in a match like tonight. Luis Caicedo, fine. You know, I would prefer Scott Caldwell in this situation because I think Luis Caicedo is not necessarily as good of a player when it comes to trying to slow the game down and to play possession. But fine, you got to do something. All the substitutions they made were attacking subs. Like you had mentioned, they took out Wilfred Captain. They took out Tommy McNamara. And, you know, Teal Bunbury obviously came out as well. But, they, you know, when they bring in Emma Boateng and they bring in Tajon Buchanan for the other two midfielders, you're left with just a back four and Matt Polster. And then you have everyone else pushing up high. You know, granted, the Revolution did get the goal out of those subs, which I think is something to take away. And I think the fact that subs are being made earlier in the match is also something to look at and to say, hey, that's a positive sign because Bruce Arena likes to wait and hold his cards until the 80th minute for whatever reason. The fact that he made those subs a little bit earlier today was encouraging to me, but you said he only used two of his three windows. And you can also make subs at halftime too. If you're going to be bringing Adam Buxa on, the only reason that he didn't necessarily start is because he came back from international duty. Why not make that sub at halftime and save one of those windows? You know, there's a lot of questions I have with how Bruce Arena makes his substitutions, and I don't agree with 90% of his substitutions that he makes. Granted, Bruce Arena is, you know, the GOAT of MLS head coaches, so who am I to sit here and judge his decisions on substitutions? But when I'm looking at the result of the match, I think that he could have done quite a bit differently to make, you know, maybe secure the victory tonight. There is a saying in soccer, and you know, players win games and coaches lose them. And, you know, nobody won or lost tonight, but I think playing at home against this Chicago Fire team, a draw is an unacceptable result. And I think it's almost as bad as a loss, right?
Yeah, and I just look at, you know, the goal they conceded, the counterattacking goal, and you just, in theory at least, if you had Luis Caicedo playing next to Matt Polster, that's the type of goal that's a lot easier to prevent. So that surprises me, I guess, you know, looking back in hindsight, because we've seen Bruce make subs like that a lot this year. And if the reasoning for not bringing in Luis Caicedo is that he doesn't trust him as much as Scott Caldwell, then why is Scott Caldwell not on the bench? But
yep. Well, and they started the game playing a 4-2-3-1. And to your credit, you were mentioning earlier in the podcast, what formation were they playing once they brought in all these attackers? They took out, you know, a defensive midfielder and then a central midfielder who I don't know where Tommy Mack actually fits in on the pitch. But they took those two out for attack-minded players. Where is everyone else going to be playing? They took out a lot of defensive ability. They just Bruce kind of destroyed that whole formation. And you know, I guess granted it wasn't really working, but I think a lot of that was just due to players and being rusty. It wasn't a fact that the formation wasn't functional. I think having two defensive midfielders or defensive-minded midfielders on the pitch at the same time is not a bad thing. Especially against a team that has been struggling so much as Chicago has, a lot of the personnel deployment really kind of made me scratch my head tonight.
Yeah, and I get kind of, you know, going very offensive to go out and get the win and take the lead, but you know the thing that bothers me is that you had an opportunity to go back out there once you got the lead and adjust into a formation that actually made sense and was more sound defensively, and he passed up on that opportunity. So I think that's the part that sticks out to me. Yeah. Bobby Reverson on Twitter asked, is there something that Chicago does that makes the Revolution vulnerable to a quick counter? I feel like they did this before. It does feel like they did this before. Is it something about Chicago in particular? What do you think, Chris?
They did do it to us before, you know, and it's, yeah, it was what September 23rd, I think it was that I said, right? Teal Bunbury scores in the 62nd minute, and they come back. Gaston Jimenez comes back in the 63rd minute to tie it up 2-2. I think, you know, the Revs eventually went on to win that match thanks to a Carlos Heel goal in the 90th minute. But yeah, they've done this to us before. They've had our number. Maybe it's just a Chicago thing. Maybe it's something to do with Chicago because the Revolution opened the season against Chicago. I correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that was the season opener against Chicago where it was a two-all draw. Yes, it was, because they scored in the first 12 minutes. So there was no quick counter, I guess, in that match. But in the season opener, it was a two-all draw against Chicago. And then in Chicago, the Revolution came out with, you know, a very late winner. Was it 91st minute? I think it was actually. It was in stoppage time where Carlos Heel got the winner 3-2. So it was a one goal victory. And then, of course, tonight it's just a 2-2 draw. So, yeah, Chicago kind of has his number. Thankfully, we're not going to be seeing Chicago in the playoffs because they did get eliminated with the draw tonight.
Yeah, and Chicago has some talent. I mean, we talk about them struggling, but offensively, especially, there's some talented players there that, you know, can cause any team's problems, and it certainly caused the Revs' problems. So it's not too shocking that defensively the Revs have had some issues with them. But yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot. There's some problems that the Revolution have defensively, and Chicago was able to exploit them. So Charles Maddox kind of asked a similar question on Twitter. How did he draw a team at the bottom of the table like Chicago, but are expected to get a result in places like DC and Orlando, where the atmosphere is going to be more difficult to deal with? He has to be more clinical on the offensive third. Chris, I mean, I think you're probably on the same page with me that, you know, this was rushed. You can't read too much into this result. But how do you expect it to result in DC and Orlando? I think the answer is we've seen the Revolution do that all season, and I think the Revolution have had some of their worst performances against crappier teams, right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, let me answer this question, I guess, with a question towards you, Sean, and say, do you think that the Revolution possibly play to the level of their opponent?
I think they do to some extent, because I feel like the worst performances for the Revs have been against some of the teams that aren't doing so well in the standings. So I think
yeah, Toronto, FC Dallas, Chicago twice.
And they seem to, I think they kind of get up for the games that are in the exciting atmospheres and difficult places to play too. So, you know, I'm not worried about that. I think this was kind of a rusty game, and that part doesn't worry me. We've seen the Revolution get big wins in difficult places. So,
I think Matt Turner elevates his games when he's in a difficult place like DC or Orlando, especially when they're fighting for playoff positions. So.
Yeah, and then Mike Kennedy asked, does the sloppiness in the final third concern you going into the playoffs? This is a bit of a similar question to Charles Maddox. Or are you comfortable based on the impressive record this season in KG one-goal games?
The KG one-goal games, yeah. It's been a bit annoying, I guess, to not be able to relax at the end of a game as a Revs fan or a Revs supporter this year, because it's been a lot of one-goal games, or it's been a lot of draws. I think there was only two, maybe three games that they won by multiple goals. I think it was only two. And yeah, I mean, it doesn't bother me necessarily, or it doesn't concern me that they're only winning by one goal, because you only need to win by one goal. So who cares how many goals you win by? When you look at the wins counter, it doesn't say that you blew teams out or you just barely won. It's the fact that you're just getting the win, and that's what matters at the end of the day. The thing that does worry me a little bit is the sloppiness in the final third. But at the same time, if you're looking at the statistics, the Revs are clear and away the best team as far as goals scored. They have 59 goals scored so far, and that is tops in MLS. So yeah, there's concern. I mean, they could be setting all sorts of records if they were finishing, you know, just a bit more of the chances that are getting created. But overall, no, because they're still creating enough chances to make up for their ineptitude when it comes to finishing.
And I think we've been asking, you know, people have asked this question. We've been asking this question all season. And at some point, you know, you have to, like you said, the Revolution have the most goals in the league, and they're finding ways to win all these games. So at some point, it's not just luck. It's, you know, the Revolution create a lot of chances, and they don't finish as many as they should, but they still finish enough to put teams away and get the win. And this was a perfect example of a game where, you know, the Revolution could have scored more goals than they did, and it came back to bite them. But most of the time this season, that hasn't happened. So, you know, it concerns me a little bit, because the same way it's concerned us all season. But, you know, it's hard to be too concerned, because this has been a problem all season, and that the Revolution are creating a lot of chances and finishing some of them, but not as many as they could be. And they're still in first place on pace to set the best record in the history of the league. So, I don't know. I think it's at this point you have to kind of be comfortable about their ability to generally win one goal games.
Can I ask you though, Sean? So when it comes to playoff time, if the Revs face a team like Nashville, where it's going to be limiting their chances, this might be the only scenario where I'm actually concerned, because the Revolution do so well because they get so many chances. But Nashville, I think, is one of the greatest defensive sides that we've seen in MLS. Maybe not statistically. I don't know where they sit statistically, because I have not been following that club's, you know, that closely. But when you're watching the way that they play, they, you know, obviously they are parking the bus. They're sitting eight back most of the time, and they're extremely difficult to break down. It has proven difficult for the Revs to be able to break them down. And also, Nashville's been very good at being able to score so far this season as well. So that might be the only matchup where I'm looking at saying, if they can't start converting their chances, they might be in for a big surprise if Nashville comes to town.
I'll agree with that. If they're playing a team like Nashville that's so capable of parking the bus and doing it very well, then that is where it comes more into play. Although, you know, even with what we were saying about Matt Turner earlier, I still like the Revs' chances if it goes to a 0-0 PK shootout and Matt Turner is a net.
Yeah, 100%.
But no, I agree. When you're playing a team that can play defense as well as Nashville can, that's definitely a concern. And I think it's a concern for any team. But, you know, the Revolution haven't created enough chances against the Nashville to be wasteful with them. So we'll see what happens. I think any Revs fan will be hoping that the Revolution don't face Nashville for a lot of reasons, including the fact that it'll probably be a really boring game like it usually is. Yep. but we'll see what happens there. Not blue, not green, it's teal kind of asks about Chicago on the opposite side. How is Chicago not better this year? They have lots of talents and resilience in the small sample size. Three games that they watched all against the Revs. I think we would both agree that we've seen a lot of talent from Chicago. Yeah. I think a lot of it's bad coaching. You know, they had a coaching change. I think a lot of it's that. But I also think that there are some holes in their roster. You know, having a 36-year-old Jonathan Bornstein playing center back at this point in his career is not a great sign for a team.
No, they do have a good team, and I think they have a very good base. I think they have a good future ahead of them. I said that last year as well, and it didn't really carry over. But, you know, they have a lot of good pieces. And to your point, Sean, you're mentioning the coaching, and it's really unfortunate to see that it didn't work out. But I can't think of the coach's name that they just let go. But they had the pieces of the puzzle. They just couldn't necessarily put the puzzle pieces together. But I'm looking at the roster, and I'm saying, you know, Mauricio Pineda, I'm saying Alvaro Madron, Robert Berich, who is a very good goal scorer, even if he hasn't been necessarily great for the Chicago Fire. I think Berich is a huge problem maker. And then Madrada, Aliceta, and Pineda, that trio in midfield, I think, creates a lot of chances. And I think, you know, Chicago has a lot to be excited for going forward. If they can start getting other pieces to help support them, maybe another attacking piece for them is what they need. But, and not to mention Gabriel Slanina, their 17-year-old keeper, I think, such a bright future. I don't know how long he's going to be able to stay in MLS, because that kid is really showing quite a bit of talent. And I think Slanina has a huge, you know, future for himself professionally as well.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see how he develops. And I, you know, if he keeps developing the way he's going right now, I think he's, you know, he's a future on the U.S. national team the way he's playing at 17 years old. So I'm extremely impressed by him. And, you know, I guess that's one other point on, you know, on that team in general is, you know, Bobby Shuttleworth was their starter for much of this year. And, you know, nothing against Bobby Shuttleworth. I think he's more of a kind of an average level MLS keeper, where I think Slonina has the ability to be a lot much more than that. And that's something, you know, to kind of to watch going forward. If they are able to keep him, you know, we've seen in New England what a good goalkeeper can do for a team with Matt Turner. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, again, Bobby Shuttleworth had some good years with the Revs. He helped them get to an MLS Cup in 2014. But I think you can kind of see the difference between those two goalkeepers. And if, you know, Slonina, I think, is capable of being a top-class goalkeeper, and Bobby Shuttleworth is, a good MLS goalkeeper, but not a great MLS goalkeeper that can, you know, win you games the way that a Matt Turner could, or I think from what we've seen from Slonina, that he might be capable of doing in the future. So,
and Slonina started this year as third on the roster as well. They have Kenneth Kronholm as well, who was the starter going into the season. And I think that he's, you know, a better option, obviously, than Bobby Shuttleworth. And Shuttleworth, of course, we all know him very well. I think he's a quality MLS keeper. But the fact that Slonina beat out Shuttleworth to take that starting spot, maybe it's because Chicago knew they weren't going anywhere this year. But he's getting some great experience so far. And I think that he has earned the number one spot on their roster ahead of Kronholm as well.
Yeah, I think it would be a travesty at this point for him not to continue to be their starter, both for their sake and for the potential future for the U.S. national team.
Right.
So, I mean, there's a lot of players to be excited about on that Chicago Fire team. But there's also, you know, significant holes in that team that, you know, need to be fixed if they are to be a contender. And like I said, if when you see a lineup out there where, you know, no offense to Jonathan Bornstein, but at 36 years old, he probably shouldn't be, you know, a guy that used to be a pretty decent but not amazing left back and now playing center back at 36. I don't know. That just right there, when I'm looking on paper, is not ideal.
Right.
Gunnar Gunzi on Twitter says WTF mostly. I don't think we need to respond to that. No. Eric on Twitter notes that there were flashes of brilliance, moments of opportunity, and all too familiar lapses. Kaptum got his goal. We could have had five. Chicago could have had three. I feel like a draw was deserved after the break. What's the team talk to keep the team focused when the Revolution go ahead and avoid what we were talking about earlier where they conceded, you know, goals so quickly?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that Eric's takeaway is a draw would be deserved after a long break, because I think I would go into this saying that the Revolution came out almost guns blazing, right? They came out with a very strong 11, almost your first team 11, and then they subbed on all attacking power, where Chicago approached this game differently. You know, they went out with their standard 11, I guess, and then they started subbing on some young guys. You know, they still have a 17-year-old keeper. I don't care. I'm going to say how good Slanina was, but I'm also going to say he's still 17 years old. You can get in the 17-year-old's head, and you can make him make mistakes. And he's going to make mistakes. He's only 17 years old. He hasn't made all the mistakes in the world. He hasn't seen everything. You need to start attacking a keeper like that. Coming away with the draw, I think, was unacceptable from a Rev's perspective. And I always try to be the positive person, and I'm having a real hard time staying positive with this result today. But as far as everything else, Kaptum getting his goal, you want to stay positive. I'm going to go on that positive train. That was so good to see Willie get that goal. It came out of nowhere. Did not expect that to happen. I did not expect Willie to score at all this season, to be honest, if I'm being frank here. But I'm really happy to see it. It was a great goal and flashes of brilliance. Sure, there was moments here and there. You know, even at kickoff where Brandon Bae came down the sideline, eventually took it out of the byline. He played it off his shin, I think it was, or something like that. He took a weird bounce, and it ended a quick attack right at kickoff. But yeah, there was flashes of brilliance. There's stuff to be excited about, but I feel like a draw was not a great result for the Revolution.
Yeah, and Eric also quickly noted that there was a great crowd tonight and asked what the count was. It was 28,414, so that was a pretty good attendance for the Revs.
Fantastic.
Traeger Girardi on Twitter brings up Kaptum. He said Kaptum looked more improved and Tommy struggled. Is the door still open for Kaptum to take the final spot in the Revs' first choice 11? What do you think, Chris?
I don't think that's up to for debate anymore. I mean, great, Kaptum had an okay night. You know what? He still got subbed off. I mean, I guess Tommy McNamara got subbed off first, but I don't know. Scoring a goal doesn't necessarily save you or put you in a better spot. You're not going to score from that position all the time. The odds of that goal going in is astronomical. It wasn't a great shot. It was a good shot, and he was lucky to hit it exactly where he needed to. He was lucky to catch Slanina slightly out of position. That goal is not going in, you know, 9 times out of 10.
Well, it's not going in if the turf's not wet from the rain either.
Yeah. You know, I was going to add that point as well, too. It had just started downpouring right before he scored. You know, there was a lot of elements that were going into play for that goal to actually go in. He did better tonight than he has done in past. I still think you need to be more consistent in order to earn a spot on the first 11. And that's the hill that I'm going to die on. I'm not going to open the door for anyone that's not going to be able to show any sort of consistency. I think Tommy McNamara has been more consistent than anything. And I don't think he necessarily had a bad night tonight. I thought he had a quiet night. I thought that maybe he got in the way of Bo a couple of times in the attack for some bizarre reason. I don't know what he was doing inside the box at those moments. But otherwise, I thought Tommy McNamara was just a quiet night. And it's still his spot to lose, I guess. I don't even think that Willie can do much to take that spot away from Tommy McNamara. I think McNamara would have to lose that spot for anyone else to be coming in.
I'm with you 100%. And, you know, I thought McNamara had a quiet night as well. But if you're trying to talk about Kaptum, I think Kaptum's best nights for the most part up until now were nights where you could just say he had a quiet night. So, yeah. You know, he scored a nice goal tonight. I don't want to, you know, be too harsh. I thought he had a pretty good game. I thought probably his best game for the Revs. But at the same time, he was asked to play a pretty weird role. He was pushing up a lot. There were a lot of times where he was kind of the furthest guy forward, I noticed, which was interesting. And then I didn't think he actually did anything in those positions up until that goal. I thought the first half he was, you know, playing very far up and wasn't actually creating any chances or even being that involved. And my biggest issue with Kaptum continues to be that, you know, he's a central midfielder. He should be very, very involved in the play. And he really, there hasn't been a game, you know, he has moments. You know, he scored a great goal. He had an assist a few weeks ago. He's done, you know, some good things, but you know, when you look at his number of touches as a central midfielder, they continue to be really low. He played 67 minutes today and only had 40 touches. I think that's up from some other games, but it's still not a very high number for a central midfielder. And again, I think he's gotten better. I want to give him credit. I think he scored a nice goal. Bruce Arena said after this game that, you know, multiple times said after this game that both on the broadcast and in the press conference that, you know, he's a guy that has needed to adjust to a faster paced league, which is always kind of funny to hear when, you know, someone's coming from La Liga, which is supposed to be one of the best leagues in the world, and they're saying they need to adjust to play faster in MLS. But that's what he said a few times, and that's always tough in the first season. So, you know, maybe that's the case and it'll be better next year. But I don't think there's enough time left for him to convince me that he should be starting over Tommy McNamara this year. And again, yep, like you said, that one goal doesn't change things for me. I don't think he had that amazing of a game otherwise. He had a few good moments, but he also committed a sloppy foul just outside the box that led to Matt Turner's best save of the game. You know, if that goes in, the Revolution are in a much different position in this game, and it's because, you know, Willie Kaptum did a bad job defending and, you know, committed a foul just outside the box. So it was not a perfect game, that's for sure.
I was waiting to pounce and to comment that at the end of what you were saying, to mention the fact that he had it wasn't just a sloppy foul. It was a stupid foul.
Yeah.
Not even 10 yards outside the box that led to a free kick. And it was a really good, I think it was Madron that took the kick. It was a really good free kick. And, you know, thankfully Matt Turner was up to the challenge and made the save. But it also, after that, it led to a corner kick. You know, you don't want to be conceding eating set pieces, and all this started from a Kaptum foul that didn't need to happen in the first place. That drove me mad. And, you know, I was going to try to, I had a tweet ready to send out earlier today, and I didn't send it out just because I thought that he was playing better overall, but I can't go all night without actually getting this off my chest. But I'm going to take a guy that played for Valencia over a guy that, you know, trained in La Masia any day. And that's it. That's going on record. 110%. That's my final opinion. I don't care. Take anybody off Valencia and put them ahead of anyone on La Masia. And I don't care if Cursed Revs comes back and finds me and I do something. I say something completely stupid there, but that's my take 110% of the time now.
The one thing I'll say is this guy has Barcelona on his resume. He must be way too good for MLS and is going to dominate here. Is such like an old way of thinking about MLS that I think has been proven time and time again isn't true. But I am less down on Kaptum than I was a month ago. Yes. But I still am very much not ready to say he belongs in the starting lineup. And the other thing, you know, to bring up or that I wanted to mention is, you know, when you're thinking about Kaptum and if you're in agreement with us that, you know, he doesn't get in the starting lineup, I did see other people asking, like, is he going to get more minutes in the playoffs? You know, when the Revolution are losing in a game and Kaptum's on the bench, I don't think you bring him on. I don't think that he's the guy you turn to. I think there's several guys that you bring on before him, whether that's Boateng, you know, if Bunbury's on the bench, him.
Tristesen.
Yeah, I don't think he's the guy you turn to. And on the flip side, when the Revolution are up in a game and you want to bring on, you know, more defense to hold on to a lead, I don't think you bring him on either. So, if he's not starting, I don't think he adds much value on the bench either, except in a situation where, you know, somebody gets injured. So that's, you know, I don't know. I don't expect him to play a big part in the playoffs.
I honestly hope he doesn't. I don't like saying that because, again, I try to be the optimist, and I really wanted to see the best out of Cap Team. I was really excited for him, and maybe my expectations for Cap Team coming into the season were set way too high to begin with. And the Revolution did a really good job of hyping him up, and the fact that he just hasn't been able to deliver has really let me down quite a bit, you know, time and time again. And the fact that he did have a good game really didn't change my opinion whatsoever on him. And you want to say it a good game, I don't even know if you want to call it that good of a game. He had a lucky goal, and it was still a very good goal. He deserves a lot of credit for that. I don't want to like downplay the goal, but it was still a lot of elements that played into that becoming a goal. And the fact that he conceded that foul right outside the box, it still drives me crazy.
Well, and the one last point I want to make is because I read a lot into the fact that Captoom stayed on, McNamara was taken off. But, you know, at the time I read a lot into it, but now looking at it, McNamara is one yellow card away from suspension. So I'm sure that also played into the Bruce Arena's mind when he was deciding who to take off, because Polster is also one yellow card away. And if, you know, you happen to finish this game out and McNamara and Polster both got yellow cards and were out for the next game, that would leave quite the hole for the Revolution. So by taking McNamara off, you guaranteed at least one of them wouldn't get himself suspended. Unfortunately, neither of them did, but I think that probably played a role into that decision as well. So I guess in retrospect, I'm not reading that much into the timing of those substitutions. Several more questions. Cameron on Discord asked, are the Revs showing their weaknesses? And he pointed out those two weaknesses being Bruce's game management and buy it right back. Thoughts there? I think we kind of covered this, but anything to add?
No, I'm not going to add too much to this. I'll say the buy it right back thing. I think it's just him. He's learning to play right back a bit differently. He's learning to play more as a right wing back, and he's not necessarily coming back as much. I praise his defensive abilities before, and I still think that he has it, but his awareness, I think, is lacking. And the fact that he's not sitting back as much, it's really exploiting his lack of awareness at right back and lack of ability to come back in transition when he needs to.
Yeah, I'm completely with you there. And, you know, it again, though, I do think his awareness has been worse the past month than it was earlier in the season. So we'll see if that gets fixed. But yeah, Misha on Discord brings up something we also talked about before. Matt Turner's performance was very meh. Obviously an amazing save, but does it look like international duty tired him out? I think we both agree it kind of does, right?
Yes and no. Does it tire him out, or does it? I mean, as a goalkeeper, you get much less tired.
I think it mentally tires him out. I'm speaking as a goalkeeper, but more than physically.
The mental tired.
I'm just thinking about when he came back from the Gold Cup and was thrown right into a game and basically said he basically implied he wasn't necessarily fully ready for it and wasn't at his best. I kind of think that there's a mental aspect to it where he gets all, you know, hyped up for these international games, completely understandably, and then, you know, coming back to a less important Revs game.
Yes.
Has kind of an impact on him.
Yeah, and so you're getting amped up to play against Mexico, and then what lives up to that? How can you compete trying to live up to the hype against the Mexican national team, right? And then you come back and you're like, oh, I'm going to play against Chicago Fire. It's not quite the same level that you're preparing yourself for. Maybe there is a bit of that mental aspect with Matt Turner. You know, maybe he needs a big game in order to really amp himself up. It's hard to get excited to play against the Chicago Fire, at least the 2021 Chicago Fire, just like it's hard to get excited about playing a lot of other, you know, Eastern Conference teams the Revolution have faced recently. Maybe that's part of it. I thought that he's been very meh the last few matches, you know, ever since the Gold Cup, I think. I don't, you know, maybe Orlando was the only time he had ever showed up and really looked like Matt Turner that we've all come to really know and love. I don't know if it really worries me, because I think that he does show up when the time calls for him to really step up. I think that he does, you know, he steps up to the occasion when it's needed. But if there's nothing big going on, no big storylines, nothing to really be excited for, I think he kind of takes a back seat. And maybe that is something mental with him that he needs to address. I don't know. Do you feel the same?
Well, and kind of to your point, too, is, you know, when you're playing in these U.S. World Cup qualifiers or the Gold Cup, you know, knockout tournament, these World Cup qualifiers, you know, if you lose the wrong game, you might miss out on the biggest tournament in the world, the World Cup. And then, like you said, you come back here and you're playing the Chicago Fire, where you already have the number one seed in the East locked up. I don't want to say that it is mental, but you have to wonder if maybe it is a little bit, because I would, right. You know, if I putting myself in his shoes, if I was, you know, playing in these extremely important World Cup qualifiers and then coming back to play the Chicago Fire, I would have trouble viewing it as important when the only thing the Revolution are playing right now for is the supporter shield that Bruce Arena seemed to imply he doesn't really care about. So,
well, you go from playing a game in El Salvador with all those crazed fans. Can I use that word? Is that a good word for them? They were a great atmosphere for El Salvador. It's got to be so difficult for an opposition to be going in there and facing El Salvador with those fans behind them. And then you come back to, you know, I know the El Salvador game wasn't very recently, and I know the last game against Costa Rica was in Columbus and Matt Turner didn't even play. However, you have those types of atmospheres that Matt Turner is going up against, and then he comes back to MLS where he's got, you know, I know a lot of people that were talking about it over on Discord, a lot of people over on Twitter were just saying how the Revs game tonight was full of a bunch of families. And, you know, it's a lot of the MLS atmosphere, and a lot of, you know, the outings are families, and it's a much more docile environment when you're talking about the fans and just how the landscape is when you're playing a match. And the fact that you don't have people hurling beer bottles onto the pitch or cups of whatever they're throwing at you. You don't have, you know, all these rabid fans screaming at you, and it's a totally different environment. Instead, you have, you know, one-fifth of the crowd maybe clapping Revolution or something like that. It's a very different atmosphere, and maybe that's some of what it is that it's easy to check out. It's now a very tame game for him. It's not something that he's really stepping up for. I don't know if that's it. I'm completely speculating on this, but it could play into it.
And the other point too, I think that we should mention is, you know, I completely agree with you that it doesn't take the same time to recover for a goalkeeper from a game that does from a field player. But there is still a lot of travel involved in these international breaks too, when they're playing, yes, you know, three games in a very short period, and, you know, there might be home away home or away home away, and they're traveling to different countries. That definitely takes a toll. And, you know, I think you can kind of get through that more the same point we just made. I think you can kind of get through that more through adrenaline when you're going into a hostile environment like an El Salvador or like a Panama or wherever you're playing. I think there's some adrenaline that helps you push through that. And then again, you know, coming back here with a quick turnaround to play in a Revolution game where you probably don't have exactly that same adrenaline, that probably doesn't help either. So
I will say Matt Turner's last traveling was just from Ohio, so that's, you know, a 6-hour drive. I don't think there's a whole lot to say with this match as far as Matt Turner's travel. But yes, overall, I agree. There's a lot of, like, especially the international travel, it is very wearing.
Yeah, and we had two last questions that are both about Tejan Buchanan. We talked a bit about him before. Misha on Discord wants to know, mentions that Tejan had a lot of selfish shots that he felt could have been more solid chances. And then Matthew P. on Twitter says Buchanan didn't show anything really in terms of passing tonight. If he doesn't work on his vision/passes, what do you think about his future at Club Bruges? Chris, anything to add from, I know we talked a little about Tejan earlier, but anything to add here?
Yeah, look, this is just a byproduct of Tejan Buchanan at this point. This is what Tejan's game is. And it's the fact that he's, I saw someone mention, use this phrase on Twitter. So I'm going to regurgitate it here. And I'm just going to say that he's looking for the glory shot, right? He's looking for glory. And that's kind of the way that Tejan Buchanan plays. The fact that he's got confidence under his feet now, it's really kind of showing that he does like those glory moments. And you know what? He delivers a lot of the time. You know, maybe not more often than not, but you give him five chances, he's gonna really take away at least one of those chances and come away with some glory. And is that a chance that the Revolution are willing to take? I don't know. It does feel a little different, knowing that he's not going to be here at the end of this year? Is there a little bit of Tejan that just says, I don't really care anymore, I'm ready to move on, I'm done with the Revolution? I don't know necessarily. I can't, you know, begin to speculate what Tejan is thinking in his head. But maybe that's going on with him. Maybe not. I don't know. Sean, I don't know if you have any thought or opinion as to what he's thinking necessarily, knowing that he is moving to Club Bruges after this. But overall, I think his selfishness and his lack of passing, I think that's just a byproduct of how Tejan Buchanan plays.
I mean, my biggest complaint, like I said earlier, from this game was not his lack of passing. It was that he tried to dribble the keeper instead of shooting it and dribbled into the goalkeeper.
The glory.
Yeah. That was my biggest complaint. But I, you know, I could see why, based on this performance alone, you might think that, you know, he's going off to Club Bruges. His confidence is way up, and he maybe thinks he's better than some of his teammates and can go it alone instead of passing it. I haven't seen enough this season to actually think that's the case. You know, there were some situations this game where I thought he could have passed it and didn't. But like you said, he's a very capable dribbler. He's very capable of creating chances for himself. He's very capable of creating chances for his teammates, and he does that plenty of times too. So, I get some concern from this one game, but I think the overall product that we've seen from him this year, it's way too soon for me to be thinking, you know, anything beyond, it was just one performance where he had a couple of times that maybe he should have passed it and he didn't. I'm not worried about it. And I also don't think it means anything for his future at Club Bruges, because he's playing really well for Canada right now internationally and showing he's a really talented player. So I'm not reading anything at all into what this means for his future playing over in Europe.
Same. Yep.
I think that's all we had for questions. I don't have any final thoughts today. Chris, did you have any final thoughts?
No. I was going to try to think of something at the last minute off the cuff. I don't have anything else. You know, I'm happy to see the Revs playing again. I'm looking forward to these last four matches. And, you know, I guess it's all sites on the supporter shield at this point. And, let's go Revs from my point.
And it is a crazy busy schedule for the Revs. The Revs return to action Wednesday night at DC at 7:30 p.m. That one's on MyTV 38. I don't know if we'll be doing a podcast after that one. But as always, you can follow us on social media at Revolution Recap on both Facebook and Twitter, also on Instagram. You can follow me at Sean L. Donahue. Chris, where can people follow you?
Yeah, you can follow me over on Twitter. It's the best place to find me, at Chris Belucas. Or if you want to follow me just for soccer stuff, I'm also at Revs Revolt.
And I think that's it for tonight. Again, not sure if we'll be doing anything after Wednesday. We do plan to do one after the Sunday game, if not, but we'll keep you posted. Thanks again for listening.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.